powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, there's such a good question here from Joey in Salt Lake City. Joey says, hey guys, I can't tune in today. Joey, how dare you? But we'll catch up on the podcast later. By the way, you can download that wherever you get your podcast, Jake and Stacy Podcast. Joey says, hey, I heard the history of failures in the Seahawks drafting, and I appreciate that we've drafted a lot of players that didn't work out, meaning like I appreciate the perspective, but it's hard to know if it's meaningful without a comparison to other teams. Do all teams have bad draft histories, or are we exceptionally bad? That's such a good question from Joey and one I want to get into. I'm going to start with looking at one specific position because it was highlighted by, in particular, a very recent signing, and that is the most recent Seahawk, Adrian Peterson. Am I curious to go see Adrian Peterson in person? Absolutely. He's a future Hall of Famer. Do I think that players could learn something from being around him? Absolutely. He's a future Hall of Famer. Do I think that he's going to make a drastic difference with this team? No. Would I like to see other young players get, you know, a little more reps without Chris Carson in? Yeah. Do I think that there is a chance they don't with Adrian Peterson in there? Yeah. So all of that's going to be really interesting. We'll see what Peterson can do. I don't hate the move so much as I just don't completely understand it. And I'm anticipating that we're probably going to see a running back hit the injured reserve. And maybe that's why this move was made, whether it's, you know, they have two banged up guys right now with Travis Homer and Rashad Penny. Both of them are going to be working this week to get back. And neither has been placed on injured reserve. Carroll was asked particularly about Penny yesterday and said, no, he's not on IR. We're going to wait and see how he goes about this week. But the signing of Adrian Peterson, Jake, highlighted to me one of this team's biggest failures, which is finding running backs. And not only that, making the most of the running backs that they have. And I think that this upcoming matchup against San Francisco is a really fascinating comparison because, you know, the 49ers have not won a Super Bowl as recently as Seattle. They've been to one more recently, but have not won as recently as Seattle. So credit Seattle for that. Likewise, Kyle Shanahan hasn't had a lot of wildly successful seasons despite having pretty stacked, loaded rosters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So credit Pete Carroll for that. It's not one having clearly the upper hand, but what I will say, San Francisco has been able to do a lot, despite not really having like a franchise running back. Like, think about it. If you could, like, in the last, I don't know, Curtis, in the last 4 years, let's say the last 4 or 5 years, who's been the go-to guy at running back for San Francisco? Like, who's been their guy since maybe Hyde for a couple years in a row?
Since then, probably Raheem Mostert.
Right.
But he's been hurt a lot.
And that's exactly right. He was only their leading rusher for 1 year, 2019, when they went to the Super Bowl and lost. You've had Elijah Mitchell. You've had Jeff Wilson Jr., Mostert, Matt Breda. A different rusher leading this team each of the last 4 years. And yet, they have managed to still find some success in the run. And
yeah,
it's really interesting because Seattle, when they've not had Carson, has not been able to replicate that. And I wonder, Jake, and I mean this genuinely,
mm-hmm,
what goes into that?
Well, a big part, this goes back and dates into history. I mean, the Shanahan run system and run game has been something that has really gotten the best out of no-name running backs for a long, long time. And it's odd because this running system is the system that you have here in Seattle right now because Shane Waldron is running a version of that. Now, not quite to the same degree, but I think Mike McDaniels, their offensive coordinator, does a great job in this area as well. But, Stacey, the truth of it is that with Kyle Shanahan from day one with the 49ers, this was part of their identity. This was the number one aspect about their offensive identity was in the way that they ran the football. And they have always been a great running team. So it hasn't mattered with necessarily who the running backs are. It's been amplified if you've had good running backs in the system, but it doesn't need it. And it is because as you're going through it, the identity is a huge part of it. The emphasis in that aspect and the creative ways that they are able to manipulate with pre-snap motions, with just understanding how to set guys up. I mean, I think Kyle Shanahan is very brilliant in that aspect. But I would come back to number one, Stacey, it doesn't happen out of thin air. It doesn't happen out of nowhere. It happens because it is the identity of the team and of where Kyle Shanahan starts everything first and foremost.
Pete Carroll talked about, you know, they've got their a good zone running scheme with some zone man blocking principles. He talked about still being pretty good on the perimeter. If you're ripping that apart for a casual fan, what is it they do well?
Well, I think scheme. I think all the scheme stuff is irrelevant. I think zone schemes and outside schemes and all these different things. Like, does it come down to what is your fundamental principle and is your team reflective of that principle? And Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers, it's reflective of that principle. They've got a good offensive line. They've got Kyle Juszczyk that they spend a lot of money on, and he's a fullback, tight end, hybrid that can do a bunch of different things, but he's the best fullback in the NFL right now. George Kittle, I know everybody thinks about him, and they think about the money that he makes and catching passes and things like that, but George Kittle is the best run-blocking tight end in the NFL, in the game right now. So everything is a physical aspect, a physical nature to the way that they approach it. And if you look at the Seattle Seahawks and the way that they approach it, their roster construction does not reflect the quote-unquote identity or philosophy of what Pete Carroll has.
Hang on one sec. I will challenge you with one thing, which is to say that at times their roster construction has reflected that. It just hasn't done so consistently. For instance, in 2018, they drafted the best blocking tight end, Will Dissly. They drafted a first-round pick running back. Again, I'm talking about just construction, not execution. They drafted a running back in the first round. They added DJ Fluker, one of the best run blockers in free agency. And they had a great year from Chris Carson. And they led the league in rushing with 160 yards per game. They've also...
But that hasn't continued.
No, exactly. But I'm saying that they have made efforts in roster construction to get good run blocking. Damian Lewis, he's like super stout. He has not excelled with pass blocking. Like, he's supposed to be this really stout interior guard.
Yeah, but he's regressed this year.
I know, but what I'm saying is I am not critiquing that. I am saying that it's almost more confounding and more head scratching that there have been efforts to build for those principles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. And then you go out and get Gabe Jackson, who's a very good, solid veteran in this league, but you don't go out and upgrade the center position, which I think was a big, big mistake, and that has proven to be a big mistake with this group. And so overall, I mean, you ultimately, when you have guys that are underperforming and you don't have a clear established identity, you don't have a running back that you feel like you can go to comfortably, I think that has been a huge issue as to why this team has really, really struggled in that area.
And maybe part of the reason they didn't upgrade the running back position, or excuse me, the center position, is because they invested a second rounder in Ethan Posick and felt like he had a pretty decent 2020 season. And that they could find other ways. I mean, Chris Carson was healthy heading into the season.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in Gabe Jackson. Damian Lewis had a promising year. Like, I bet they thought, clearly they thought, that they would be better there. Like, it's not saying the end result hasn't been the same and being critical of it. It's saying that there is, to me, it's almost like there's a bigger problem. To me, it is saying more.
Like if what? You have, to like, me, what's the bigger problem then?
That your evaluation of talent or your either willingness or ability to correct it when it doesn't work out. To me, it is a bigger issue if you make an effort to build for that kind of team and it doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, either that's bad luck, and that's certainly part of it. Who can foresee Chris Carson having the neck injury he had this year?
Yeah.
Who can foresee a broken leg, right? Like, you can't see those things. And who can foresee Rashad Penny suffering regular season-ending injuries or not being able to stay on the field when he was healthy all through college and high school?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want to talk about drafting mistakes. Who could see Malik McDowell getting in an ATV accident, some freak accident? He's playing well for Cleveland right now. It just you thought that he'd be done in the NFL.
Yeah, but when you look at those in a vacuum and you look at those individually, you can say, yeah, okay, that's you can understand.
No.
This and this,
when
but
you
collectively,
look at them collectively, it's a problem.
It's a huge problem. It's a massive problem.
Well, another
and then,
problem
and then
is
you
that
bring
there are
up
other
Ethan,
guys.
You bring up Ethan Posick.
Yes.
Well, you had an opportunity. You were talking about the draft, and you talk about emphasis and talk about the main ingredients with this group, and you have Creed Humphreys that you could have taken from Oklahoma, who has been outstanding for the Kansas City Chiefs, and you pass him up and you take D. Eskridge, right? And what have they done to make D. Eskridge a big factor in their offense? Absolutely nothing. Now, he's been hurt, but since he's been in the lineup, and even before he was in the had his concussion, you didn't really make much of an effort to get him really, really involved in what you do. So from top to bottom, whether it's talent acquisition to then talent development and utilization, there is a huge brewing problem. And so you wrap all this up, and now you're 3-8, and you're bringing in Adrian Peterson here at 36 years old to try and spark the run game. And it may work out. I mean, here's the thing, Stacey, in 2020, over 600 yards rushing, 7 touchdowns, 3.9 yards per carry. I mean, he could be productive for you. I mean, maybe, but I don't think he's going to fix a very broken run game.
Well, and here's my other thing, too, is like I'm seeing a critique right now on the text line, and it's fair. Where's the money on the team? Not in the trenches like it should be. Yeah, they're not spending money really in the trenches like they should be, but they have spent draft picks there that haven't worked out. Ifedi, first-round pick. McDowell, second-round pick. Collier, first-round pick. Posick, second-round pick. Jaron Reed, second-round pick. Clark, second-round pick. Lewis, third-round pick. You know how many people from that list are still on this team? Collier, healthy scratch. Posick, who's not playing especially well, and Lewis.
Yeah.
End of list. So there have been first and second-round picks, with the exception of Lewis, who is a third-round pick, to invest in the trenches on either side of the ball, and it hasn't worked out. Yeah, no wonder the run game isn't working out.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds like I'm being heavily – I am trying to separate being heavily critical of drafting and talent acquisition and being critical of players, because I don't mean to be critical of players. Everyone in the NFL is talented, and I think that any one player on this team, there are a lot of ingredients that go into bad seasons,
mm-hmm.
including injuries. But it is also – you know, again, I think frustrating for fans to look at a team like San Francisco and say, how's Elijah Mitchell getting a 100-yard game?
Yeah.
And here you are signing Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, well, you have a more dynamic way of going about it. And you have a better brain trust. I mean, let's just call it what it is. You also have a better brain trust and expertise in that area than what you currently have right now to fix the problem and to make it work. And it's been proven. It's been proven with Kyle Shanahan and Mike McDaniel and that group for a while. So to compare them to compare, you know, well, why can't we do that? Because you don't have them. You don't have that same level of expertise in that area, and that's just the honest truth. So this is the hard part about all of this to me when we have this discussion, when we look at this team and we look at the overall big picture. There are such big, glaring problems that stare you in the face before you can really even get to, all right, which player do you keep? Do you keep Russell Wilson? Do you move on from him? You know, what other players should they move on from? I mean, where is the trust that you have the ability to then go out and make the right decisions and go out and find a way to make this team better and fit the philosophy that you ultimately want and that you ultimately have as an organization from the top? And that is the biggest challenge that you look at right now, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how you get past all of the misses.
Well, there's also questions that make it difficult with talent evaluation when you think, why didn't someone work? Because sometimes it's not because that player's a bad player. Alex Collins worked elsewhere, right? Mark Lewinsky worked elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen guys work elsewhere.
It happens. Yeah,
it happens. But I'm saying in general, when you're evaluating talent and you're evaluating who's on the Seahawks roster in 2022, it does become difficult because you start thinking, is this the wrong guy or did I not have the right combination of players?
Mm-hmm.
Did I not have the right ingredients to make this work?
Correct.
And again, I like that our last two conversations have been about the trenches and about the running backs in particular, because I think that's how you make it work. Certainly for this Pete Carroll team. All right, jumping to four down territory.
This is four down territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake, what can Adrian Peterson bring to the table for the Seahawks?
Well, what Adrian Peterson can bring to the table, I mean, he can bring hard-nosed running to this group. And I think that what you've had here with Alex Collins has been a very good runner. He's a one-cut guy, and I think he's done a very good job. He's been very serviceable. So, Stacey, you talk about, you know, running backs that could do well. I think Alex Collins could do well in the San Francisco 49ers running scheme. I think he's a good, capable back. But the thing that he's not, that I've said from day one in this whole conversation, is he's not a guy that creates when there is nothing there. He is not a guy that gets the extra dirty yards and is falling forward when contact happens. Adrian Peterson, even at 36 years old, runs with the style that is forward, forward-leaning. And so he can, and he has the capability of picking up hard, dirty yards. Now, he's not as good at it as he once was, but that is something that I think he brings to the table and brings to this offense that you haven't had. And so I obviously don't love the signing, more of a reflection of what it means for your team and your roster and the current running back group that you have, that all three running backs that you've had, you drafted in recent years. But I do believe that Adrian Peterson will be an upgrade and is a good addition from a talent acquisition standpoint, just not an amazing acquisition that's all of a sudden going to elevate the run game to great new heights.
Second down. What are you expecting the Seahawks defense to do versus the 49ers that's different?
Well, the unique thing about the Seahawks in the way that they play the 49ers, it's drastically different than everybody else that they play. They play more aggressive. They press the line of scrimmage. They bring pressure. And they collapse the pocket. Reason why is because they are way more confident. They are way more confident in attacking and pressuring Jimmy Garoppolo than they are any other quarterback. And that, to me, has been a great reflection on what they think of Jimmy Garoppolo as a quarterback. And they know that Jimmy is not going to throw the ball deep. They know that he's not going to throw on the outside, on the edges, and around the numbers. And so they're not as threatened by the concept of don't get beat deep. So therefore, you can be more aggressive. Therefore, you can be in more attack mode. And you see it year in and year out since Jimmy Garoppolo has been the quarterback here for the 49ers, that Pete Carroll, Ken Norton Jr. really dial it up, and they become a more aggressive defensive style than any other team that they play.
Third down. Do you expect Sam Huard to transfer upon Jake Haener's arrival to UW?
No, I don't initially. Now, I think that Sam Huard isn't someone that is reactionary, super reactionary. Hey, Jake Haener's going to come here. I do believe that, you know, Sam has a good support system around him to talk him through the situation and say, look, if you had to sit out one more year, it's not the end of the world, and you can learn, and you can learn from DeBoer. And quite frankly, you didn't really even have a year of development at the college level. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, John Donovan, what kind of coaching was he giving Sam Huard? I don't think anything very good. So you have a chance to learn from Kalen DeBoer. You have a chance to learn from Jake Haener, who knows the system extremely well. And you go in and play, you know, the next 3 years or whatever. So that is a possibility. But don't take for granted, Husky fans, for the idea that maybe there were people in the recruiting process that Sam Huard really liked, coaches that he really liked, but situations just weren't right. And if any of those coaches were in a good situation that was intriguing enough to Sam Huard, maybe he would think about, you know, looking at a different place. So I just don't think it's as solid as saying, nope, there's no way he's going to transfer. I think it's on the table, absolutely. And there's going to have to be a lot of conversations and a lot of thought processes, a lot of things to happen to eventually come to that correct decision as to what he should do.
Now, before I jump to fourth down, let me remind you guys we have a short show today because the huddle starts in 40 minutes. Dave Wyman, if he's well, everyone's sick, going to join us for a two-hour preview of the Seahawks' upcoming game. And we know who our player guests are. Jake, guess who they are. Oh, just kidding. You have a lot of choices, I'll tell you.
Okay.
Cody Barton and D. Eskridge. I'm very excited to talk to D. Haven't had a chance to talk to him yet.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah. All right, fourth down. Can you imagine if I was like, guess. Just guess who the players are. You have, what? I mean, 53 choices. So, good luck. How did the Seahawks get lucky this week?
Oh, man. They really, really got lucky. Debo Samuel out with the groin strain, and he is out for 1 to 2 weeks. And Deebo Samuel has really been the thing that has gotten this offense going. He has been the main dynamic weapon. You could look at the run game and see how it's exploded and all that, but the touchdowns, the explosive plays, it's come from Deebo Samuel. So that is a big blow to the 49ers offense and the productivity that they've gotten from him. And then Fred Warner, in my opinion, I mean, gosh, he is top tier. I mean, he might be the best linebacker in the game. And he is a huge reason why that you look at the 49ers defense. They are aggressive, they're downhill, they're attacking, and they're together. His leadership, everything that he brings to the table from a pass standpoint and a run game standpoint, he is the glue that keeps that whole 49ers defense together. And to not have to face him, man, that could pay off dividends for this Seahawks offense. You might see Adrian Peterson rush for 100 yards because Fred Warner's not on the field. You might see this team be able to attack the middle of the field a little bit better because Fred Warner's not on the field. He is that important to this defense.
Imagine if 36-year-old Adrian Peterson rushes for 100 yards.
I honestly could see it.
Adrian Peterson was drafted in 2007.
I know. I honestly could see it, though, because Fred Warner, not having him, that's a big missing piece to that defense.
Curtis, how old were you in 2007?
I was learning to drive. Actually, I got my license that year, 16.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Fun for you.
Now I'm married with a kid.
Yeah. There you go.
It's amazing.
It hits different when you're talking about the last time you saw the Mariners in the postseason.
Yeah.
Then you're
we're talking about fifth grade.
Yeah. Very different conversation. All right. Don't forget, you can watch the show live on 710sports.com.
Dark times.
Video. Coming up in the timeline, if you guys haven't been to the MLB's official website, it is wild, bonkers. I'll tell you what you're missing. You don't need to go look at it right now. It's very weird, though. Plus, Business Insider report from Bradford William Davis says MLB secretly used two different types of baseballs this past season. Very interesting stuff.
Whoa.
I know. Coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Well, got another ball conspiracy headlining The Timeline. This time it's not about any footballs being deflated, but rather about two different baseballs being used. This from Business Insider, a physicist. I'm so proud of myself for getting through that word. I struggled with it in the break. Good job, Stacey. Measured a ton of baseballs from the 2021 season and found that there were two distinct types of balls being used. One was the baseball that was a little heavier, a.k.a. the juiced baseball, one that led to a surge in offense, a surge in home runs. The other was the deadened baseball, which had a slightly lighter core, a.k.a. the de-juiced baseball. This is the one that MLB wanted to introduce to kind of curb some of that offense. Now, here's the problem. Both baseballs were being used in 2021. And why is that a problem? If they're randomly introduced and the players know about it, maybe it's no big deal at all. But it sounds like the players didn't know about it, even though MLB claims that the players' union was informed about it.
Right.
And that means that there's all kinds of questions left over, Jake. Like, were balls distributed evenly among different teams? Did some teams have more of the deadened balls than other teams? Did some baseballs...
As the theory goes, I think it was a player that they had said games in prime time got the juiced balls so that the games would be much more appealing to casual viewers because there was tons of home runs. And games like the Mariners and Rangers would get the deadened balls. Because no one's watching that, at least on a national perspective.
And the problem with that is, well, then you're messing with money. Because then you're dealing with players that some players are having their typical years or maybe having an offensive surge. And other players might be seeing offensive declines because they aren't getting the same, I can't say number of reps, the same opportunities to play with the juiced baseballs. And so they are seeing, I mean, you're talking about some players that could be seeing a difference in millions of contracts in contract money if their offensive production is way down.
Who's the genius that came up with this idea?
Who MLB
is
themselves.
The genius?
Yeah, there's 30 of them.
So it's not weird, I want to say, for
how
any
stupid are you?
I know. Well,
like, seriously.
I know.
Stacey, how dumb are you if you're Major League Baseball and you get caught doing this?
Yeah, I don't
know. I mean, now, this is such a ridiculous thing.
Is it shame on them or is it shame on us for now realizing this when there was somebody who had pointed to this being
yes,
a possibility earlier this season?
Yes.
Home it's run still derby, shame on them.
Home run derby champion Pete Alonso.
Peter Alonso.
Oh, no, that's a fact. It's not. Guys have talked about it, but I mean, in 2019, there's a huge class of free agent pitchers. Then that's quote unquote the juice balls. And then 2020 was a strange year with the COVID season. But now that we're back to playing a regular season with a ton of shortstops or position players that are going to be paid a lot of money, like high caliber players. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's not a coincidence, and I think that if yeah, that's definitely is something that they do.
Young Peter was onto something there because he was telling the truth. MLB was very much messing around with two different types of baseballs this year,
mm-hmm.
and that ends up affecting. For instance, if you are a player that's getting the heavier core, you're seeing great offensive numbers. And if you're maybe defensively on a team that's facing opponents or in a game where you're having the juice baseballs, then you're not fielding as many because they're going out of the park. I mean, the problem is if this isn't applied equally, if players don't know about it and if people don't know in which game these different types of baseballs are being used, it's all kind. It causes a mess of confusion, and it sounds like a random thing that there would be just a very slight difference in baseballs, but it makes a huge difference in those final numbers.
No, it does. It makes a massive difference, and I just, it's one of those things to me that Major League Baseball, there's no wonder there's such bad blood between players, the players' union, and Major League Baseball. I mean, there's a lot of bad faith that goes into that. And if that is something that is widely known and that is something that, well, I mean, we reacted to it and talked about it and a lot of people probably scoffed at it. I know that I was saying that, hey, I totally bought in. One, because I'm totally down for a conspiracy theory like that. But two, I think that when you're talking about Major League Baseball, trying to find and tinker with ways to make the game appealing and appeasing and all this stuff, they always find the wrong way to get it done. They just have this innate ability to always press the wrong buttons. And this type of issue, Stacey, it's unexcusable. It's unexcusable. You are messing with people's money. You are messing with people's livelihood. You are effectively tinkering with certain games, certain individuals, certain players, certain teams to benefit them. And what teams benefit from this opportunity? The teams that naturally get to play in national games more often than not.
Now, Curtis, I know you're eating. I have a quick question, QQ. Is Pete Alonso implying that MLB, that their owners, do not want to pay a ton of money to top guys when they hit the market, and so they want to have balls that go out of the park when it's a pitcher market, and they want to have balls that don't when it's a bunch of big bats.
That is the implication, okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, the timing just lines up. It lines up,
it's
man.
It's just incredible.
What
it's
a tangled web so we weave.
Yes, it is.
And I would not put it past a bunch of billionaires.
It's disgusting.
Just messing with their curved mustaches.
Billionaires are among the cheapest people on earth, and they will do anything in their power to not spend their money.
You know the game Monopoly? True story. It's based on a true story. And that person is running a couple of MLB teams right now. Truly.
How can I get out of paying somebody $10 more million? I'm going to dent the balls.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm going to start an entire like supply chain of like this new ball that we're inventing to decrease those numbers so I pay less
it's
money.
Just such a joke. Just keep it the same. Stop messing with the balls, okay? Stop messing with them.
Anyways. Next story here, Aaron Rodgers is now accusing the Packers of leaking his medical info to the media, as Dak Prescott would say, that's HIPAA.
Yeah, look, again, with these reports, I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know who's talking. It seems like there's certain coaches that may have friends in the media that they don't realize are actually just trying to report things. On, but
guys on your own on the Green Bay staff, you're saying?
Oh yeah, Age, you've known about that. There were guys for a while who were who had their people they would leak stuff to.
So, anyways,
I mean it's a very strong accusation, and guess what? Aaron Rodgers isn't wrong. He's 100% right.
That information gets randomly leaked.
Yes.
Yeah, but the problem is that Aaron, that happens forever from all of time.
Yeah, I know. So
like, there's always connections. Everyone knows everyone in media.
Yes. But also Aaron Rodgers has the right to be upset about that, to be annoyed by that. I mean, I think that, you know, when it comes to players' medical information and when it comes to, you know, particularly like, you know, the toe or things that they're dealing with, you know, these are things in conversations that I think get leaked out in terms of the benefit to somebody else, and you wonder what those benefits are, right? It's one way or the other. It's a narrative spin all the time, but I don't think it's ever going to change, Stacey, but you can shout into the wind Aaron Rodgers if you want to.
Yeah, one of the weird things about sports and that kind of information is in the regular world, all of that would be seen as this gross infringement of privacy. And in sports, I think much more often than not, it's seen as news.
It is because people are betting on games.
Yes,
people
exactly.
are setting their fantasy lineups on games based off of injuries and things of that nature. So the information that is of the player that week, it is completely different. It's a completely different, you know, set of context in terms of why people are interested and want to know about the injury status of a player and what they're dealing with and how that affects their play.
All right. We're going to do a quick round of what I need to know. Get your questions in right now to the Mac and Jex text line 206-421-3776. Then we're going to jump into the huddle. Short and show today. So we're going to your questions
yes.
right now, turning it over to you guys. Any question you have, any single question, send it in right now. Again, that number is 206-421-3776. Your questions are next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
It's what I need to know. Get those questions in to the Mac and Jax text line, 206-421-3776. We'll start with this one. I love Matt Hasselbeck, but why does Matt always sound like a kid who's out of breath but is trying to tell you a cool story? I've never noticed that. I'm going to play this
random.
So this was Matt. Matt is on with Mike Salk every single Wednesday for an entire hour. It's Matt Hasselbeck Show. I haven't listened to this cut. This is a random cut from it.
You know, there's another thing that they were doing in this game where they're chipping with Gerald Everett before he goes out on a shallow cross route. Well, that's great. You chipped him. It, you know, you gave me more time as a quarterback. But now you're not.
I don't know. I think he sounds normal.
He's just breathy when he's talking in
you
between.
Know, I think he's just getting excited talking about offense.
Yeah.
As any quarterback is wont to do.
That we do. Yes.
You guys, you are who you are. You know what I mean?
Yes. And you can't run away from it. You can't hide it. It's just who is who you are.
What I need to know, who between KJ Wright, Jaron Reed, and Shaquille Griffin have the Seahawks missed the most? It's a good question.
This offseason?
Yes.
Man.
This season, when you're looking at where the team is.
I would have to say Shaquille Griffin. The person that you miss the most is Shaquille Griffin for sure. Because the
really?
Cornerback because the cornerback group has really, really struggled.
Oh.
And you know, I mean, look, you had a couple weeks of Trey Brown, but as a whole, what Shaquille Griffin was for the most part, he was healthy. He was available. And I think you are missing Shaquille Griffin. That doesn't mean that Shaquille Griffin was unbelievable for you and it wasn't the right move to walk away from him. But I do think you miss him out of all of those three guys. I do think you miss Shaquille Griffin the most.
I think KJ Wright. KJ Wright was so good with sniffing out screens, so good on the perimeter. I think he worked so well with Bobby Wagner. He was a great leader in the locker room. I feel like you're missing that kind of, not just veteran savvy and presence, but
mm-hmm.
genuinely at 32, he 31 in his last season, he was still a really good player for you.
Yeah, it was. He was a really good player for you. But I think that also the part that, you know, with KJ Wright is that, even with the Raiders, he's not really playing that much. So he's very much on the tail end of his. He's very much at the end of his career here in the league, and so I do miss the best versions of KJ Wright with this defense. There's no doubt about that.
Someone said Matt Hasselbeck has a cold, just like you, Stacey. Ah, my brother. Okay, I understand. It's a struggle, man. Who's the best one-time player who ever played in Seattle ever?
Wow, this is a great question.
I like the options they gave
us. I do,
too.
I was
Jerry Rice, Edgerrin James, Devin Hester, Patrick Ewing, Horace Grant, Ricky Henderson, or Adrian Peterson.
Didn't
Jerry Rice?
Am I misremembering that Devin Hester had like one really solid return that was called back?
Yes, and after it got called back, I think the Seahawks either threw a pick six or like got a safety in the end zone
but
or something
that
like
moment,
that.
In that moment, that was a pretty great moment.
Jerry Rice, I believe, held the Seahawks Monday night yardage record for a long time because he had one really good game against the Cowboys.
All-time great. All-time great Seahawk.
But of that list, man,
I might go Ricky Henderson.
Yeah, Ricky Henderson scored the game-winning run in the 2000 Division Series clincher.
Yeah, and he was, you know, look, he did produce
did
the same
well.
Way, but just
stole a lot
that,
of bases.
Yeah, he did steal a lot of bases. Watching that guy run at 41 years old was unbelievable.
I think Ricky Henderson is the answer.
Yeah, I would go Ricky Henderson. Patrick Ewing with the Sonics uniform is just weird. That was weird.
Need to know, do you like hot buttered rum? I don't like... No.
Why?
Because I don't like a lot of... I actually don't like a lot of holiday drinks. I don't like eggnog. I don't like...
I can get down
like
with that.
Microwaved wine?
Eggnog is...
Mold wine or whatever? Disgusting.
Eggnog, I just... Oh, man, I don't like eggnog. But
you
it's
chew
one
eggnog.
It's something that I drink one time a year.
Why?
Literally once. Just Why? Because it's like... It's eggnog. It's part of the holiday season. Like
I'm gonna,
I don't mind.
I'm gonna do it one time.
I don't
like
mind
one time.
It.
You don't mind it?
No, I don't mind.
My father-in-law.
It's an acquired taste.
My father-in-law actually drinks eggnog with Sprite.
Yeah,
chases it.
That's not bad.
Wait. I'm sorry. Beg pardon. He pours Sprite into eggnog.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does it not curdle?
No.
I don't. I still don't understand. I don't.
It adds a little bit of carbonation to
it.
You might like it because it's carbonated.
I've done it with Mountain Dew. It definitely makes it taste better.
I'm not shocked at all you've done that with Mountain Dew. I would believe you've put Mountain Dew in every single thing that you drink or eat.
Stacey, you love carbonated water all the time.
Oh, yeah. I don't like flat water.
I would imagine the carbonation would probably make it a little more palatable.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I do love... Your girl does love a carbonated water, sparkling water.
Maybe you could pour a Perrier into eggnog.
I would love that.
Ew.
I would love that.
Yuck.
Next question.
Gross.
Here. Jake and Stacy from the 509. It seems to me everyone simply ignores the fact that Pete and John worked hard this summer to please Russell Wilson. Before the season, people liked the offensive line moves. When were the Seahawks successful? When they didn't have to pay a Hall of Fame quarterback. Does a team need a Hall of Fame quarterback to be successful? I don't think so. There are only so many Tom Brady's. Ooh. You know what? I disagree, but I like the question. Because it is like one of those questions that's really hard. You could easily make the case for either side.
Does a team need a Hall of Fame quarterback to be successful? No, they don't. They don't. You need a franchise quarterback, and having a great one absolutely helps.
There are a lot of examples of teams that have been stellar everywhere except for quarterback, and that has been their breaking point. Whether it's Blake Bortles with the Jags, Jared Goff with the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple other examples I'm missing. I mean, you could argue that Jimmy G, a better quarterback with the 49ers, would have won that Super Bowl in 2019, even against the Chiefs.
Absolutely. So, no, the answer is no, you don't need that. And yes, everybody was anticipating that the offensive line would be better, but this group has not played to expectations whatsoever. And guess what? They didn't work that hard. Okay, they let the offensive line. That's the greatest misconception about this offseason. Actually, Pete and John sat there and let the offensive line market go by, and it sped up way faster than they thought and anticipated. And Gabe Jackson was the last remaining decent guard that was on the market, and they had to make a trade to be able to get him. Now you're paying him $9.5 million right now and for the foreseeable future. That is the true story of how they tried to upgrade the offensive line, swing over Damian Lewis to left guard, didn't address the center position. There you have it.
Last text in. It's an acquired taste, so acquire some taste.
Oh!
That was about eggnog. You know what, 509? You're lucky I'm in the holiday spirit and that we're about to jump into the huddle or I block you from the Mac and Jack
Holy
text line
smokes.
Right now.
Keep texting in.
Never
that was never stop.
All right, well... Woo! Jake and I are staying here, but Jake and Stacey is technically ending because the huddle is coming your way next. We're going to talk to Dee Eskridge. We're going to talk to Cody Barton, a bunch of Seahawks experts. It's going to be a great time, a 2-hour preview of the Seahawks' upcoming game against the 49ers. Don't go anywhere.